This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Thursday morning to you. Yes, today the NCAA tournament does start. Four games will be played in Indianapolis. Then they will emerge and go into round number one, which will start on Friday and Saturday. Yeah, it's a little off. Today usually is sort of the celebration of the tournament. But we are getting it underway. And, you know, when you think about what COVID has done to sports, right? You know, you remember a year ago around this time when we saw the NBA shut down, everything else started following suit. The NCAA basketball season was the only one that didn't complete its journey. Yeah, there were individual events that were canceled, like golf tournaments and NASCAR races and things like that. But as far as our main sports, the sports that we follow to get to the conclusion, we got a baseball season done. We got a basketball season done. We got an NHL season done. And college football went through and started in the fall and moved all the way to getting to the national championship. But college basketball did not. They didn't come back in July, and they didn't come back in August. It was just over. It was the only sport of the six major ones in this country that didn't complete its journey. So today, even though I'm not a huge fan of the first four, I never really liked it when they put it together. And I remember when it used to be two and now it's four, so I'm just going to have to learn to live with it. Even though I'm not a huge fan of the first four games, I'm going to watch them not just because, you know, I want to know who's going to win and go to the tournament, but because it's the start of this journey to get to the NCAA championship for college basketball, something we didn't get to see last year in any form at all. So I'm glad for that. But COVID is pushing its way very slightly into the tournament. Two teams have lost major components to their teams due to the COVID-19, Oklahoma and Georgia Tech. We'll have that for you. Plus, it's a throwback Thursday. And is Russell Wilson really going to get traded? There is an offer on the table that was rejected. It doesn't look like Seattle is budging at all. We'll talk about that as well on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us on a throwback Thursday. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
A throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
This is one of my jobs, is to help him craft a statement. I consider myself a good writer, and I wrote like five or six different versions, maybe six, seven paragraphs a piece. He read them all. He didn't like any of them. And finally he says, give me that paper. He takes the, I'm waiting to see if, you know, if it'll take like 10, 15 minutes. He's going to put something together based on the different paragraphs. So he just takes out the pen and writes, I'm back. And it was majestic in its simplicity. You know, I mean, there are certain times you don't have to explain it.
That was Michael Jordan's agent, David Falk, on the I'm Back Facts on this date in 1995. It's kind of interesting how back then a fax was what everybody used. You know, the fax machine was the way of communicating in 95. Now you could do a video, you could send an email. I mean, there's so many ways with social media to announce an I'm back kind of moment. But that back then it was a simple facsimile that was sent out as Michael Jordan returned to the NBA from his 17-month hiatus to play baseball. It led to the conspiracy. I've got to keep bringing it up. It led to the conspiracy thoughts that that's when the NBA was like, yeah, you can come back now. You're good. You can come back. Because there was the, if you don't know, the conspiracy was that he was suspended by the league in a way that was not a public suspension, that they wanted to sort of say, look, you're kind of associating with some gamblers. We don't like that. We'd rather you kind of disappear for a little bit until this calms down. We're going to let you even play some baseball in the White Sox organization. But that was a conspiracy theory, I believe, for a long time. I really did. I still believe it for a while. And, you know, I'm kind of softening up on it. It makes perfect sense, though. It's one of those conspiracy theories you can believe because it makes sense. All the pieces fit. Whether it occurred or not is still, you know, there's still people who buy it. And there's some people who go, it, not even close. The league really took a hit. But again, if you're David Stern, imagine at the time you were presented with this evidence in the 90s when we took, you know, gambling in a different direction than we're taking it now. But Jordan hanging out with gamblers, and he was gambling in Atlantic City, and who did he owe? What did he owe? Who was he hanging with? If you're David Stern, you just can't go, well, he's the best player in the world. I can't do anything about that. That was a dangerous thing for commissioners. Don't worry. I swear. Commissioners worry about the integrity of their game more than anything else, more than anything else. It's sad, but you know, you think about all the athletes who keep returning from drug abuse, criminal, you know, a criminal element, whether it's domestic violence, whatever. People seem to get jobs. They seem to get to come back after serving as some sort of penance and then getting to come back to the being employed. But the thing that commissioners from baseball to football to basketball, hockey, everybody, if your integrity of your sport is compromised in any way where the public feels that it's rigged or it's on, not on the up and up, or it's not an honest game, that's the danger. You don't want that. That's why the punishments are severe. So if you're David Stern and you're a couple of years from when Pete Rose got the lifetime ban, right? Because that happened in the late 80s, 89, I think. You're a few years from then, you got to feel like you got to act, right? You got to feel like you got to do something, even if it's the greatest player in the world. So that's where the conspiracy came from. And also to remember, the Rose situation in baseball really did lend itself to that idea that, you know, gambling and hanging out with gamblers did deserve some action. So that's where the conspiracy came up. But nevertheless, that aside, I'm back facts on this date in 1995. He went to play baseball. It was one of the craziest sports stories of the time, following him with this minor league team in Birmingham. You know, would he be a good baseball player? Could he be a natural? Terry Francona was the manager of the Birmingham Barons, thought that Jordan could, be. He had such a drive and he worked so hard at it. And he actually played pretty good in the Arizona League. He didn't necessarily, I think he played, I think he was over 200 in his time in Birmingham. But when he went to the Fall League in Arizona, he was starting to get a lot better. But when the baseball strike happened in 94 and it canceled the World Series, there was a movement by the Major League Baseball owners to bring in replacement players, right? Substitute players. And they even had those players report to spring training. And Jordan, being a union guy, was not comfortable with the idea of going in that direction. So I think it was a circumstance where he felt on principle for what he stood for as a union guy in the NBA, he could not circumvent that in his baseball pursuit. So decided, you know, why not come back? He was still young enough. He still had a lot of talent to play. He obviously won 3 championships afterwards. So nobody quite, this wasn't like a 39-year-old Jordan playing basketball. Like, he just got bored in retirement. No, he left young, he came back young, and then went on to win 3 more championships. And the league generously welcomed him back. And it's one of those stories in the 90s. It's kind of weird. If you were old enough to remember it, it was a little surreal, right? The retirement came as a shock. The baseball thing, you kind of heard that he liked baseball, but you didn't think, oh my God, he's actually going to go do this. And then when he came back, it was like, it seemed to make sense. But the simplistic version of Jordan's journey from retiring from basketball, playing baseball, unretiring from basketball, and coming back to win titles, is the simplistic journey is he went, he failed, he came back to the thing he's good at. But that's really not telling the whole story. He never felt like he could go down to the minors and be good at baseball, like just instantly. He knew it was going to take work. That's why people who were in that organization, and you could talk from the top down, from Francona, who was managing, to the play-by-play baseball guy, to the PR people, to teammates, everybody is consistent in their story of all Michael Jordan ever did the entire time he was down there was work on his baseball game. That's all he ever did. He would show up bright and early. He'd take all the swings in the batting cage. He would go out in the field. He would do anything he had to do to get better. He talked to every single person, treated everybody on the team with respect, tried to absorb all of their knowledge as much as he possibly could to learn to hit that curveball, right? To learn to hit that breaking pitch, to stay off that outside fastball when it looks so juicy, but you know it's going to be a ball. Those kind of things that you have to develop as a player. He had a lot of catching up to do, and he was trying to do it, and he worked really, really, really hard at it. He knew it was an obstacle. He didn't feel like he could just go do it. And in the end, he was getting better. And I don't know. I mean, we don't know what would have happened if the strike was never had never occurred, if Major League Baseball had gone on business as usual. Would he stay in it? Or would the drive to get back to the thing he's really good at, what he was put on the earth to do, what his talent was, really would say, you know what, in the end, I don't like failing. I don't like being the worst at this or the second worst at that or the third worst, whatever it was. I'd rather be the best in the world at something. And that's why I'm back today on this date in 1995 was important. It was important for the NBA. It was important for the NBA fans. And it was important to him. Because in the end, when you're really good at something, continue to do that until you can't do it anymore. That's kind of the life lesson. Pursue some other things. Get some hobbies. But when you're really talented at being a guitarist or a piano player or a golfer or a basketball player or an artist in any form, just do that. Do that. And Jordan certainly did. All right. So this is a fun throwback Thursday. I like this because this was I think one of the biggest stories of the 90s in terms of sports. OJ probably was the biggest one, but this was a huge deal.
Just the flip-flop back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, we all remember him trying out for baseball and us just saying, he was like, well, you know, he's a great basketball player. Maybe he can do it. I don't know. I kind of put, like, looking back on it now, I think Tim Tebow had a better shot than Michael Jordan.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. You but know, Jordan, I mean, listen, Terry Francona swears to this day that Jordan was really getting better.
Well,
he was really good. He wasn't just, let's just soften this up. Let's all just remember, you know, the nostalgic feeling of, no, Jordan was really good. Let's leave it at that.
But the thing that separates Jordan from, like, other athletes was his work ethic.
Yeah, really. Tremendous.
I mean, he would put extra hours in. If he could, he would do it 24 hours a day just to get better at his craft.
But you know what? This is a long debate when it comes to athletics at the highest level possible. There is just this feeling that you're either born with it or you're not, right? I mean, in the end, you can work really, really hard, but you can't get to the next level. It's just, it's really difficult. We've all heard, I think every single one of us has probably been around some high school athlete that you just felt when you were a kid was going to make it to the pros, right? And they don't even play college ball. They don't even make it to Division I. It's a very you either born with it or you have. Jordan was a good golfer, right? Jordan was a good golfer. And I remember having arguments with people when people would say, oh, Jordan could play on the PGA Tour. And I'm like, no, he can't. He can't. Like, I don't understand where that's coming from. Like, he can't. And they'd be like, yeah, he can. I'm like, why? Because he shot a 70? He's going to shoot a 62 on a course he's never seen before. Like, that's how you make it on the PGA Tour. Like, Phil Mickelson was shooting under par when he was 10. Like, come on. Like, when you have it, you have it. And then when people are like, well, he could play on the senior tour. Oh, okay, so when he's 50, he's magically going to be as good as Mickelson at 50? Like, the people who play on the senior tour aren't good old amateurs. They're the greatest players in the world who turn 50. So when you're 50, if you want to play on the senior tour, you have to be one of the best 50-year-old players on the planet.
Yeah, all they've lost is maybe a little more oomph on the ball.
Exactly, and the courses are shorter for them. So when a 50-year-old Phil Mickelson shows up at a Champions event, can still hit at 320, he's got wedge into par fours that are 420 yards long. Like, You just can't take a natural athlete at X and just assume he could do anything he wanted anywhere, anytime. Baseball is an impossible game to play. It really is an impossible game to play at the highest level.
I know this is a little off topic, but I've always been curious about this, and I know only time will tell. But, you know, assuming Tiger Woods gets healthy again, right? And is able to get to a competitive level again and chooses to do so. Will the senior tour become popular if Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are on the senior tour?
That's a great question, because I remember when Jack got on the senior tour.
Yes, and Arnold and Lee Trevino. And
when Jack turned 50 in 90, I remember there was a huge interest in the senior tour once Jack got there.
Now, I couldn't even tell you who's on it.
Oh, I don't either. I have no idea who's in it.
But
like, I only care about it when Phil's in it and he wins by like five shots.
Yeah, but I had that feeling that's going to come sooner than later for us, unfortunately.
Right.
But I have a feeling like there's going to be this surge in popularity for the senior tour that we haven't had, that we haven't experienced in like 20, 30 years.
A couple of years ago, I played golf in New Jersey with two kids that were going to Seton Hall, and they were 19, 18 years old. And they were good golfers. They were good golfers. On one hole of the 18 that we played, I outdrove both of them, and I felt like $1,000. I could not wipe the smile off my face when we walked up to the tee, and I was 10 yards. I caught one perfect on the screws, perfect. I mean, one of few on the day. But when I outdrove these kids who swing 1,000 miles an hour now, I was elated.
The rumor goes.
I am so old and.
The rumor goes, didn't you just walk off the course and go, thanks, boys?
I should have picked up the ball and left and said, you know what? Because it did not happen again. It happened on like the fifth hole, and then it did not happen the rest of the way. But that one moment, I felt like $1,000.
Just pick up your ball and go, it's all exactly. I needed, boys. Thanks.
All right, coming up next, COVID has hit two basketball teams as they get ready for the NCAA tournament. Two important teams and two important players. We'll give you that coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call on a Throwback Thursday.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue 1995 on a Throwback Thursday. I'm back. The facts that brought Michael Jordan back into the NBA after 17 months of playing baseball. A weak battery could leave you stranded, so don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge if your battery needs to be replaced. Their professional parts people can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So one of the concerns that we have with this NCAA tournament is if COVID infects it, how much damage will it do to the tournament? Will teams have to leave and be replaced? Will teams just advance because they couldn't play an opponent? What about five teams getting COVID? We all hope that that doesn't happen, and that the protocols that, when we talked about this yesterday, the protocols that are in place now, the social distancing monitors, the hotels being connected, and everybody in the bubble, in that bubble, is being monitored. All of that will lead to a tournament that's filled with games and contests that get us to the right champion without any sort of, well, you know, Gonzaga had to leave after round two. Like, I hope we don't get that. But two players have been affected by COVID leading up to the tournament, and they will not be available for their teams in round one. So this is an opportunity to adjust your bracket accordingly before you turn it in to Susan in sales or Bob in marketing. Georgia Tech, Moses Wright, who's the ACC Player of the Year, he has COVID. He's a very important player to the Yellow Jackets, who come into the tournament on a 9-game win streak. And Josh Pastor has had he's got Jose Alvarado and Moses Wright, two very important keys to the Yellow Jackets. Now, they're going up against Loyola Chicago. This was an 8-9 matchup, so Moses Wright being absent for a team that's a semi-underdog in this game anyway is going to put the Yellow Jackets really in a bind. And the other one, and this is also an 8-9 matchup, Oklahoma and Missouri, Davion Harmon, the Sooners' second leading scorer, he is also out for round one against the Tigers. Now, both of those teams are coming into the tournament on a downward trend. Both were looking really good, especially Missouri. Missouri was looking fantastic in January and early February. Jeremiah Tillman was out. Then they started to fade a bit, never really found their rhythm again. Oklahoma, the same thing. They were playing really good, looked like they were beating everybody, moving up in the top 25. And then, boom, the losses started to come. This is going to be a huge blow to the Sooners, losing Harmon, again, the second leading scorer. So these... If you were talking about, let's say, Moses Wright at Georgia Tech, if Georgia Tech was a three seed, probably not an impact in round one. But when you're talking 8-9, now you're talking about games that are on the fence anyway. And at least according to the committee, the way they seat them, you know, they seed them, these are two huge blows. Now, I'm glad that they're isolated blows, though. Look, I feel for Moses Wright and I feel for Davion Harmon because both of their teams could lose their round one games. I mean, to be honest with you, both of the teams could have lost with these players. I mean, these are tight matchups. However, to have at least Georgia Tech in the game without a key player and Oklahoma in the game without a key player, we're not making phone calls like, we got to bring in Louisville now. All right, here you go, BYU, whatever. I mean, BYU's actually in, but I mean, anybody else. It leads to sort of an element of, you know, we want this tournament to go on without any real interruptions and any controversy. A player or two, yeah, it's part of the COVID world we live in. So that being said, think, you know, adjust your brackets accordingly.
Yeah, at least it didn't cost the whole team.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the key.
That's the key part to this all, because we've passed that point of no return where we had four teams that were kind of on standby. We're past that point of return where they can't come in now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So it's, we got our 68 and it's them or nothing.
And then when a team can't play, the other team just will advance.
Yeah.
We don't want that in the tournament, right? Like, we really don't. I didn't like it in the ACC. I just, Georgia Tech is coming in on a 9-game win streak, but one of the games that counts is this forfeit that they had because of Virginia.
Right.
Right? They were supposed to play Virginia, and they didn't have to because Virginia got COVID, and so they got a win. They didn't play the game, but it counts as a win anyway because that's how they advanced to the finals against Florida State. So you're right. We didn't lose the team. We did lose a player, and that's important. And again, I don't mind losing players. I don't think the tournament is going to be altered because key players got COVID. A player could slip on some ice. He could catch the flu. I mean, there's a million ways a player could not play in a regular tournament when we don't have COVID. You have to put that into consideration in any sort of postseason. But when you lose, when a team forfeits because of the virus, it does alter the way it's going to be remembered, possibly, especially if it comes from Michigan or, like, imagine if Gonzaga got COVID and had to be out, and they were out of the tournament, like completely.
Yeah, that's...
Go home, back to Spokane, and that's it. We would never forget that.
Listen, I'm one of those guys right now that doesn't think Gonzaga's going to win at all.
Right.
Because I just find it hard to believe to go 32-0. But at the same time, I would hate for it to be because, oh, they got COVID.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I was actually talking to a friend of mine yesterday about this. We were texting back and forth because he wants my thoughts on the tournament. I don't know why I never win this with these pools. I don't know why they reach out to, I mean, people think I know that, you know, like I have insight on who's going to win. But one of the things I told him was like, look, there are years where the tournament brings you three teams that are just above and beyond everybody else, right? Like it doesn't mean they'll win it, but my God, they're heavy favorites. You could see Iowa win this thing. Right. You could see there's a whole bunch of teams. If West Virginia gets hot, you could see them win this. It's pretty deep. And I think a lot of the reason that it's deep for a lot of people, and this is no offense to Mark Few. I love Gonzaga. I've loved the following from when they were Cinderellas in the 90s all the way to the powerhouse they are now. I think a lot of people were with you that they just go, well, what makes this team any different than any of the Gonzaga team we ever got behind in the tournament?
That, right? And, you know, I mean, we haven't had an undefeated team since the late 70s.
Right, exactly.
And like I said before, that UNLV running Rebels team that was undefeated all the way up until the final was the best college basketball team I think that we've had.
Yeah, yeah, and couldn't get it done in the final four. Exactly, exactly.
That's Duke.
All right, coming up next, Russell Wilson. Is he really going to be traded? Well, I'll tell you what the Bears offered, and he's staying put next as we continue with Wake Up Call and Throwback Thursday.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D. Ron Culver.
All right, 1995 Throwback Thursday, the infamous I'm back facts from Michael Jordan, bringing him back to the NBA. We'd wear 45 for just a little bit before going back to 23. They would lose to the Knicks in the playoffs, because when he came back, he's coming back now. So, but then when he got back to training camp, that's when they won three in a row. Levin Reed will join us in an hour. Is that how you pronounce it? Levin or Levon?
Levon.
Is it Levon?
Yes.
Boy, Levin. Why would I give you? Why would I choose the more simplistic pronunciation? You have to go Levon. Even if your mother says it's Levin, you would say, no, Mom, it's Levon. I'm going to go Levon.
Levon.
That's a classier way to have that name. Levon Reed will join us, Patriots beat reporter, WBZ CBS Sports. We're going to talk the Patriots because they killed it during free agency.
So yeah, what's going they did a little bit that? Of shopping.
They did some shopping.
Like, you know what? It was like they were on that game show. What was that? Shopping spree?
Right.
And just,
they just
know,
went nuts.
Given a certain amount of money, and they just said, we'll take it all.
Two tight ends, Nelson Aguilar, a bunch of guys on defense. I mean, yeah. And they're not done. They got like 9 picks in the draft this year. So, oh boy.
Not only that, but we got to remember, too, they have a whole bunch of guys coming back
right.
on their defense that opted out last year, remember?
That's right. Yeah, Patrick Chung was one of them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this could actually be a scary situation for the AFC East.
Get a $5 rebate by trading up any non-contact thermometer towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters, especially when it comes to checking for fever and keeping your family safe. Unlike non-contact thermometers, Exergen's accuracy is backed by published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Details at Exergen.com. Before we get to the Russell Wilson stuff, I was talking about how I feel like this tournament is a little deep. Like, you could take a lot of these tournaments, these basketball tournaments are. I mean, in the end, I mean, it's one and done. So sometimes you get into Kentucky's really good or Duke's really good, or and you just feel like it's gonna be those teams that are so different from the fours and on down. But Iowa's really good, and like I mentioned West Virginia, but I gotta preface that by saying my buddies who think I know this. I'm telling you right now, I don't. I always get these. I get these kind of things wrong. But on this one, I don't think West Virginia is going to make a run. I just don't. 2 weeks ago, I really liked them. Now I don't like them at all. So that one I'm willing to stick my neck out on, because my father went to West Virginia Tech in Montgomery, West Virginia, where my mom was raised. And West Virginia Tech became part of the West Virginia University system. So I kind of teased my dad that he's really kind of now he can officially be a Mountaineer. Because it's now part of the overall university system. So I said, now you can be a fan. So every year I tell him how good West Virginia is. Like I say, they're this and they the press defense. And he kind of follows it a little bit. But he's now convinced me that I've jinxed this team, because I told him how good that West Virginia was the day when they played Baylor. And I said, even if they lose this game, Pop, they're really good. After that game, they have not looked good at all.
It's very real that you could have jinxed them.
I think I did. So he's now accusing me. So here's what's going to happen. They're going to lose. They might lose to Morehead State in round one. I don't think so, but they could. And then he's just going to text me how I jinxed him 2 weeks ago by promoting the Mountaineer program as best as I possibly could. So, but I'm here to kind of rectify that by telling you, no, I don't think they're going to make a deep run into the tournament, so, despite their 3 seed. So Russell Wilson in Seattle, I have a question. Is this story dead? Is this over? Has Seattle basically said, yeah, it was fun, all you people out there thinking we were going to be sending Russell Wilson to one of the 4 teams he wanted to go to. But no, he's not going anywhere. He's staying put. According to reports, the Bears offered 3 first-round picks, a 3rd, and 2 starters for Wilson. And the Seahawks went, thank you, but no thank you. He's staying put. So that's a really impressive package. If Seattle is saying no to that, Does any of the other teams have a shot at landing Russell Wilson? Or is that mostly, if that report is true, and that's kind of being reported now that that's what the Bears offered, if Seattle is going to turn that down, are we now to assume that there is really no offer on the table that's going to get Seattle to budge?
I'm willing to say yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think, and here's the point. In the Russell Wilson saga of why he wants to be traded, the demands that he wanted to make, his leaving a room because he didn't want to put input, his struggles with a bad offensive line, if Seattle were to acquiesce to Wilson's demand, it is an unsellable thing to the public, to the Seattle public, to the fan base. It is not sellable at all. You cannot sit with and say, you know, this guy, he just whined and cried his way out. You can't. You have to say to the public, we understand Russell's concerns. We understand what he's trying to say to us, and we are going to work out with him. We are going to sit with him and iron out these differences. Right? If you get this huge package from the Bears, but you are missing a franchise superstar quarterback, that's irrelevant what those players turn out to be. I don't care if all three first-rounders, unless it's a quarterback that is going to the Hall of Fame, you lose. You lose. Russell Wilson, with a bad offensive line, made the playoffs and actually should have beaten a Rams team that was using its backup quarterback. So if you're the Seahawks, it isn't rebuild time. It is fix what Russell Wilson wants fixed time. And here's the other thing. What leverage does Wilson have when sitting out? If you're Seattle, let him. He's not gonna risk the PR battle. This is a guy, when he was interviewed by Brian Gumble, and Brian Gumble was asking him, do you like this or that? He said both. Chocolate or vanilla? Both. Do you like baseball or football? Both. He loves being on the fence, right on top of the fence on an issue. He does not sway one way or the other. He likes having a positive public image. You think he's going to wreck that by sitting out in one of his prime years? These guys are competitive. Listen, there is nobody in the NFL, NBA for that matter, but we're going to stick to the league, that is in the NFL just on natural talent with no work ethic at all. All of these guys work hard. It's one of the reasons when Tim Tebow was coming up, and I would honestly tell my friends, this guy can't play in this league. And they go, no, he can. He should get out. Nobody works harder. I go, stop. Everybody works hard. You just don't see it. Everybody in this league works hard. The competition is incredible. The contracts aren't guaranteed. You could lose your job tomorrow. You could be hurt and never play again. Everybody in this league works hard. Russell Wilson is a competitor. He's a hard worker. He likes to win. He loves all of everything about playing in Seattle as a quarterback. He wants to be in this league. He wants to play next year. He's not sitting out. He will work this out with the Seahawks. If the Bears legitimately offered three ones, a third, and two starters, again, unless any of those five things is Hall of Fame quarterback, Seattle should hang up the phone. And since the Bears don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback to send their way or a pick that would allow Seattle to get one in the draft, click. Why would you? We talk about this all the time with the Cowboys. Every time we talk about Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, we mention the fact that they have not been to the Super Bowl since January of 1996. It is really hard to go to the Super Bowl. The fact that, again, the Patriots did it all those years and Brady has done it all those times is an amazing anomaly, but it's very difficult. Seattle's gone to two with this guy. They can go to... If Seattle were to go to the Super Bowl next year, nobody would be shocked. Nobody. They would have fixed this. Let Russell Wilson play at a near MVP level. Go. Right? The Seahawks can't sell that to the public. Well, we got some draft picks, so guess what? In a couple of years, we're really hoping they turn into a really good football team. Buy your season tickets online now and use the promo code FUTURE. It's not happening.
I often wonder, too, is this like... I can't put this idea past athletes, but I'm wondering if this is almost like an ego trip.
It's got to be, right?
You know, for Russell Wilson to sit back like, you know, let me throw my name out there. Let me say that these four teams wonder what I could get.
Of course. Of course it is.
You know, what's out there for me? And then Bears come back. I mean, yeah, if the Bears can't sell that, no one's going to be able to offer that.
Listen, there's very few, very, very few professions in America where there is a sense of invincibility, right? Like we always talk about, you know, in the end, everybody's replaceable, right? In the end, like I've seen it in radio where major talent in major markets, you know, will demand certain things because they feel like their ratings and revenue are just irreplaceable. Then they're replaceable. That's the way it is. In all of you people out there, all of your industries, even the top salesmen at your company, there is a certain level where they aren't invincible. But in sports, sometimes you are in a position where I'm young, I'm very, very talented, and they really won't operate without me. The cost is too. Sometimes that happens. Now, is Russell Wilson not, you know, no, because in the end, if Russell Wilson was a real problem, had a real problem, like got involved in a huge scandal, a major crime or something, like the Seahawks would survive. But if the Seahawks said, oh, man, you don't like the way we treated you in that meeting, oh, I'm so sorry about that. Here, you're like, wait, tell us where you'd like to go and we'll make it happen. How do you pitch that to the fan base? Like, yeah, we didn't listen to his input. He cried about it, so we shipped him to the Bears. Like, how in God's name do you sell that? Now, is there more layers to this that we don't know? Maybe. But it feels like this story has died down, meaning it's lacked a little buzz over the last couple of days. And again, if this report of three firsts, a third, and two starters is true that was turned down, I think it's dead until Russell Wilson makes a move. I think the Seahawks are like, there is nothing anyone can offer me that will get me to move on this. Of the four teams that you want to go to, none of those four teams has an asset that we'd want so badly that we'll give you up. So you're staying, and now the ball is in your court. You want to stay? And I mean, we're not trading you, so you figure out what you want to do next. It's very similar to what Houston's doing with Deshaun Watson, right? Deshaun Watson hasn't been moved yet, and I think Houston is saying the same thing. You want to sit out? Go ahead. You want to not play? Go ahead. You deal with the public fallout from that. I'll be honest with you. Russell, Seattle not being able to sell a trade to its fan base, can Russell Wilson sell the Seattle fan base a holdout? Can Russell Wilson sit out a year and they didn't listen to me in a meeting? I told them they need an offensive line help. Yeah, I'm sure they know that too. But again, unless there's layers nobody wants to touch right now, unless there's more to this than nobody wants to get into right now, something I haven't seen that's a little deeper and a little bit more so adversarial, okay. But right now, the only thing I'm getting is they didn't like what you said in a meeting, they didn't want your input in this, and that your offensive line stinks, so you want to go play somewhere else? Try selling that to your sponsors and your fans when you go, nah, it's not good enough, I'm not even going to play. Come on. So I think this story has died. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We continue with Wake Up Call. Coming up next, a really important rest in peace, personally for me, and I think for a lot of you who know his story. That's next on Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home? Rocket can. I teased a rest in peace. We're going to actually move that to hour two because there's a lot more to say about that. But you have a retraction that you want to bring up?
Yeah. You know, I pride myself on being a good producer.
Yeah.
And you had said something earlier, and I was like, I was confident in correcting you.
Right.
And then I said, you know what? Let me just double check and make sure. And of course, you were right. I was wrong. So I'm here. It is Levin. Reed.
Oh, it is?
It is Levin Reed. And I wanted to make sure to tell you that on air because I need to give you yours.
Well, okay. I just randomly guessed, though. Like, it's not from knowledge.
No. Own it.
Own it. Okay.
You nailed it the first try. You know, how foolish would it have been if I said, no, it's Levon. And I was sticking to my guns.
I like Levon, though. I got to tell you, nothing wrong with Levin now that I know it's his name.
Now I feel bad. I feel like I disappointed you.
Like, when we thought it was Levon, we were like, Levin, that's ridiculous. Now that we know it's Levin, that's a great name your mother gave you. That's fantastic. Yes. That's awesome. So see how I'm backpedaling completely?
Yeah, no, but I felt like we needed to do this on air.
Yes, we did. No doubt about it.
Because all of a sudden you just came back and you went, Levin Reed. People would have been like, well, wait, he said it wrong again.
There he is. There he's just a guy.
No. You were right.
Get it.
You were right. I got to give you yours sometimes.
I'm looking forward to talking to him about the Patriots, though. I'm really looking forward to hearing his thoughts on this.
This has been the weirdest offseason because, you know, in the past, we've never really talked about the Patriots.
No, not at all.
Except, you know, like, they picked up a fifth rounder that will probably be the next Pro Bowler.
Right.
That's all we ever talk about.
That's all it is, right? And they used to stock picks and all this. Remember, I'm great. Now they got picks and players. Now they got picks and money to spend.
Yeah. Now, I am curious if he thinks that picking up these two tight ends means that they made a mistake on the tight ends they drafted.
Good point.
Because they've been trying, I guess, maybe they've been trying to find the next Gronk and haven't been successful. I don't know.
I hope the Bills, after winning the division, aren't looking around themselves going, did we awake the sleeping giant? Now that Belichick is like, well, I'm never going 7-9 again, that's for sure.
Or are the Bills mad at Brady?
Yeah,
Why'd you have to go and win the first year?
Yeah, right. Why couldn't you have struggled, right? Instead of winning the Super Bowl.